stumble bum play that you hit the Bears with.
You like that one?
You like that?
It was clever.
You like that?
Jason Leisure.
I will fight Chris Emma in Starbucks. I will fight him in a Panera, a Dunkin' Donuts, a Quiznos, a White Hen, a Schlotsky's. Name the time, name the place. I'll be there, Chris Emma.
Sounds good.
Bears reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times.
I see that you're wearing your Florida Marlins cap. Did you happen to know who is the radio play-by-play guy for the Miami Marlins?
No, I don't know now for sure. I haven't lived there in so long. I don't know.
Speaks?
Who is?
It's my nephew, Jack McMullen, is the radio voice of the Marlins.
Wow. That's really cool. Who listens to him call Marlins games besides you?
My sister listens to every game.
Okay, so there's two of you.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Marlins down 7-6, and the 2-1. I want to rip down the first baseline. That's in for a base hit. This could win it. It's rolling all the way to the wall. Hillen to tie it. Sanoha in to win it. And it's a walk-off two-run double for Jesus Sanchez. The Marlins' magic continues in Miami.
Jason Leisure with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Let's do this thing. Let's talk with our buddy Jason Leisure. He joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. Jason, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. What was your reaction to the Seth Wickersham report?
Ooh. Wow. Okay, so we're just going to ease into it here today, huh? That is the first and worst piece of bad PR for Caleb Williams since he got here, to me. I think there are a few issues here. And I'll say up front, I understand. I think everybody intellectually, logically understands why he would have had concerns about going to the Bears. For me, it starts with the fact that this is the first instance with Caleb Williams since he was on the scene for the Bears, and I would trace that back to the combine in February, that he came across as anything other than authentic and genuine. Because he was out there in February before the draft saying how excited he'd be to play for the Bears and rewrite history. And he got drafted by the Bears and did the Bear Claw symbol as kind of this college-type, Roll Tide-type, fight on type signal to Bears fans, like, hey, I'm one of you now, I'm with you now. He does the Da Bears thing. And all along, you don't know, you find out later that he was considering basically everything but the nuclear option to avoid coming to the Bears. So there's all this prima donna kind of phony narrative about who he is leading up to the draft. And then he gets here, and I find all that to be completely not accurate. That this guy is very authentic, very reflective, very genuine, and this undercuts that a little bit for me. And I think, in addition to that, Chicago, I'm sure, takes this very personally, because in Chicago, we take everything about Chicago very personally.
Man, that's it's interesting. I understand.
Am I overreacting?
I don't know. I guess it depends.
I think a little bit.
I want to say yes, but it depends on your perspective. And you watched him a lot closer than even we did. You were there on the Wednesdays when he spoke. You've been there in the room. And I myself have said that there's a little bit of a fake it till you make it kind of vibe from him sometimes. So do you think, I mean, are you implying that there's some phoniness that even bled in, because, or did he flip a switch? Because I guess I thought that he flipped a switch after all this stuff and was like, well, I'm here and this is what I got to do. And if he didn't flip the switch, then maybe some of what happened last year is on him. If he did flip the switch, then, you know, he was a kid in a bad spot.
I think it's both. And I also think that his fears about the Bears were pretty much all confirmed in year one. And the Bears would, by their own admission, say the coaches that they put him, that they entrusted him to and the start of his career to, were incompetent, because they had to fire them without even waiting till the end of the season to do it. And they revamped their entire offensive line. So they would, by their actions, have admitted that they did not take care of him in that way either. So everything he was worried about pretty well-founded, it turns out. I think that another element of this is that I don't think it would have been that hard for him to quiet a lot of this down last week. I don't know why, if he's in town, why they didn't. This came out on a Thursday. Why do you not have him in the building Thursday, kind of go over some of this, prep him for what's coming, the kind of questions he's going to get, work on some answers, and then bring him out there, have a press conference Friday, talk about it. I mean, fortunately for you, if you're the Bears, it happens to be a Friday, and it's the ultimate Friday news dump for you where he can talk about it. He can say something like, hey, that's how I felt at the time. It's not how I feel now. It was a long time ago. There's a new coach here. And I'm not going to keep talking about I'll take the questions now, but I'm not going to keep talking about this forever. We're not going to revisit this after today.
Yeah, I think that's the right approach. I actually had someone in PR reach out to me, not Bears PR, but in PR in general, reach out to me and say that's the approach that Caleb should take, is to hit this head on and be like, yes, I had issues with the way that this thing went, but now we are moving in a different direction with a new coach that is not going to leave me out here hanging and bear down. Like that should probably be his approach. My thing is, I don't share your same feeling that fans will care unless Caleb is a disaster next season. I think if everything is everything, then it's not a big deal. If he's bad, there will be a vocal minority of people that will use this and say, well, he never wanted to be here anyway, and they will question whether or not he's giving 100%.
Yeah, I agree with what you just said, although I'm not sure it'll be a minority. I think that this costs him some goodwill if things go bad. I think if Caleb comes out and he's excellent, then no one will remember this, and you know, it'll be nothing but celebrating how the Bears were able to recognize their mistakes quickly in his first year and correct them. But if he's not playing well, I think he has lost some of the benefit of the doubt with this story in people's minds and hearts, where, you know, had Caleb Williams not worked out at some point and without this, I think a lot of people would question whether it was the Bears doing what they've done, doing what Caleb Williams was afraid of, because we all see the talent with this guy. It's undeniable with this guy in a way that it was not with Justin Fields and Mitch Trubisky. I think now it will be, well, this guy didn't want to come here anyway, and then they did everything possible for him, got him the coach, the offensive line, the skill players, drafted people for him, and he still couldn't make it work. I think he's going to lose some goodwill if things go south.
Yeah, no, I think that is true. But in terms of last year and what we all witnessed, I think you are incorrect that the fans are at this moment going to turn. They might turn if things go bad, but at this moment, the vast majority of people that we've heard from, interacted with, are, as a texter says right here, empathetic to Caleb and any doubts which he had. Like, because we saw just the debacle that it was. I do think that he has to talk. He really needs to talk this week and say exactly what you said, Lawrence, that you heard from the PR professional. And I would add, he's got to say that when I spoke with Ryan Poles last year, it changed my perspective. And everything that Ryan Poles has done and Kevin Warren have done has only made me feel good about things, because those guys are still here. And those guys were there last year. So it's not just a regime change and investing in the new. He's living along with Poles and with Warren, and needs to make it clear that they were not part of the problem.
Now, the next time that he would talk, in theory, would be tomorrow, because the Bears have practice and access tomorrow.
Shouldn't he? But our guy Mark Grody says he's not slated to speak. Is he going to?
I was going to say, if, you know, even if he talks then, you're still letting this go on how many days longer than you could have already mostly closed it up back on Friday? If he doesn't, it's another week after that. I mean, how long will you let this sit here? I've also have heard the same thing that you just said from Mark Grody, that he's not going to talk tomorrow, even though that's the first opportunity where there was scheduled availability. It just doesn't make sense why you would let this drag on and on longer than it has to. And he could probably mostly close this up by coming out and talking about it now, and I don't think it'd be that hard.
I don't either. You rip the Band-Aid off, and because, like the texter said, like people in the mob are saying, there is a lot of sympathy and empathy for the situation that Caleb was in. And I think that people will give him the benefit and should give him the benefit of the doubt and say, all right, this is what I was on. I did talk to Ryan Poles, and that made me feel better. Things didn't get better last year, but we're a new team now, and I have all the assurances and support that I need now from Ben Johnson.
Yeah, man, because I can tell you that people close to Ben Johnson, their reaction to this was this. Old news. Old news.
Doesn't even pertain to Ben Johnson.
No, right. They needed a change, and change has come. But it's living on with us, partially because it's our job, but it's also living on with fans because we're so conditioned to the Bears being idiots. So this is another moment where they got to tell us.
It was confirmation bias, yes, for a lot of fans 100%. To be like, of course that's what they did.
Of course.
And I'm not surprised that they did it. And I totally feel for Caleb and his frustration.
So I think you do publicly have to take a moment as an organization and for Caleb to say, yeah, some of the stuff that happened was unfortunate, but we've moved on from that and we feel great about where we are. And I'm sure bosses will say that. They should let Caleb say that too.
Now, another part of this that's really interesting to me is I've been thoroughly impressed in the first year plus with how Caleb Williams has handled things publicly. The way he has been forthcoming, it appears to me that he's been forthcoming. The things he's been willing to discuss, the things he's been willing to take on, the accountability that he's taken for things going badly and not throwing Matt Eberflus and Shane Waldron under the bus or his offensive line when he so easily could have. It's all been really impressive to me, and he is not at all given any indication he's afraid of controversy like this. And my first reaction was, you know, when I'm reading this, I'm like, oh, so he's got, you know, Seth Wickersham has sources that are telling him this is what they were thinking. No. When you look at it closer, these are like direct quotes. These are things that they are saying knowingly to a reporter. And my understanding is that this was run by them, the Williamses, again, before it was going to be released, and they didn't have any issue with the quotes that were going to be used. So if that's the case, I don't picture Caleb being afraid to address this in any way.
Joe Tooney gets a 2-year extension. What do you think of that? What does that mean? And does this give the Bears a little bit more cap flexibility?
Yeah, in the short term, if they need it. And also, you know, a lot is going to be made of the fact that I think he'll be 35 in the final year of his deal. Offensive linemen are capable of playing to that age. And especially if you're the Bears and you're in win now mode, it shouldn't matter that a guy is in his early 30s. Your timetable for being competitive isn't going to be, in your mind, at least if everything goes according to plan, your timetable is not going to be prolonged.
So Joe Tooney is here and locked and loaded. It's an exciting thing. What do the Bears coaches need to learn about their players this week? And what's going to go on this week? And what do you think the coach's perspective should be at this minicamp?
Yeah, it's through this and the upcoming OTAs, minicamp practices, things like that. They need to assess how well the pieces fit. Take DJ Moore and Cole Kmet, for example, and DeAndre Swift. How well can those guys be part of the Ben Johnson vision for what the offense should, Ben's vision for what the offense should look like? What is their versatility? So what all can you do with DJ Moore, for example? And really their willingness. I think that's the biggest thing being looked at right now is this is your first impression with the new coaching staff. And they're essentially, even though individual players have good track records, there is no collective track record here for the Bears. They've won 15 games over the last three seasons, Matt. So there is nothing here to be precious about. There is nothing here. There should be no tolerance, and I don't think there will be any tolerance by the new coaching staff for, well, I do it this way, or I like to play this. No. The way you've been playing has been part of 15-37 or whatever the record is over the last 3 years. So that doesn't really matter anymore. I think there's going to be a lot of assessing who is willing to do what is asked, even if it's not what they've done before or not what their preference is.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see like how this week plays out too, where we had this great conversation with JT O'Sullivan earlier in the show, and he was great talking about some of the guys that maybe didn't put out the same type of effort that he was expecting last year. It seems as if with a new coach and one that who is known for saying no block, no rock, that if guys think that they're going to just kind of sleepwalk through this, they're going to end up not getting the opportunities that they want.
And along with that, you know, how much are Ben and Johnson and Eric Bieniemy going to tolerate DeAndre Swift kind of shifting just side to side, running 12 yards to get one out of the backfield? How much are they going to tolerate the DJ Moore bad body language? How much are they going to, you know, what are they going to do about, for example, Tyreek Stevenson's attentiveness? I think that there is going to be so much less margin for things like that than there was last year.
Good. That's how it's supposed to work. It's pro sports. It's football. Let's have some accountability. Be fearless about it and figure out everything that you can and use this offseason to figure out as much of it as you can before you get to August. Hey, now that Tooney is signed and you've got a little more cost certainty, you think a free agent running back is next? Are they going to wait for a while? What do you think they're going to do?
Well, there's nobody big there to go get.
J.K. Dobbins, yeah. Nick Chubb.
Yeah, it's those. I mean, those guys are on the wrong side of their prime. So, I mean, they could go get one of those guys. They have the space to go get one of those guys. But I'm not sure if they. That's another thing that you want to learn right now, Matt. You want to assess whether can Roschon Johnson be that for you. Can Roschon Johnson and DeAndre Swift being willing to play the way you're telling him to play be good enough for you that you don't go do something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Jason, as always, man, we appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.